Welcome to the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast. My name is Lee Brushnida, and today I am not joined by Mark Davis. Sitting in today is someone hot off of a couple wins over the past couple weeks, the lone wolf of No Nonsense Trivia, the one-man team known as Seth. Seth, thanks for joining me today.
Hey-o.
You might recognize Seth as being the first guest that we had on the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast in episode number 7, Honey Tree Evil Eye. Is the episode title there. And Seth is a regular at several no-nonsense trivia live events and very knowledgeable, and I'm very excited to see what questions you've come up with today.
I have decided to appropriate the chair, Mark's chair. Mine.
He's literally sitting in the same chair. It's the second chair here at the no-nonsense.
It's warm.
Mark is right now in Ireland. He's been to Scotland and London,
I believe. British Isles, yes.
Yeah, and I noticed you've been giving him some travel tips.
I try not to be his boss, you know, but I've been giving suggestions, and I don't want them to sound like I'm telling him, but man, I was so excited because I was there 20 years ago, and I see him visiting the same places. And I'm so excited to see someone that I know go there and enjoy them. But I also see him enjoying himself a lot. I think that when he gets back to reality, by that I mean Cape Coral, he'll definitely be paying for his sinful pleasures when he gets here.
So, yeah, I mean, he's been hitting the restaurants, hitting the pubs.
Yes.
I've seen he's posted some live music and stuff like that. Maybe I think he's probably got some of that on Instagram. Maybe we can link to that in the show notes. But what are some recommendations that you would give people that were taking the route that he did? I mean, basically, I saw, like I said, you were throwing out stuff. I've never recognized it. So what's your advice?
He was in Dublin, Edinburgh, and I think right now as we speak, he's in London. London always seemed too large, daunting, and expensive to me, but I have visited Dublin, Ireland, the rest of the country, and Edinburgh. I spent a good portion of time in the 90s in Belfast and East Belfast. I made a lot of friends over there that I'm actually still friends with to this day. There, a couple of them have a band. They were kids when I was there, just young kids, but they grew up together. They were in the same neighborhood. They have a band now called the Emerald Armada. Check them out. They're really great. They're all over the place. They're really well known in Northern Ireland and Belfast.
What kind of music do they play?
It's like rock and folk music. I guess you could kind of describe it like that. It's all original stuff that they play. They're really great. It's done by two guys. The Emerald Armada, yeah. Okay. But if I were to go over there and recommend just on aesthetics and beauty alone, Mark got to see Edinburgh, which is just a stunningly beautiful city. It's gorgeous. There's a big castle in the middle of it. It's got a lot of history there. And it is just, it's breathtaking. It's
must
a sight
see
to
destination.
Behold. That is a must-see. If you were in the British Isles, I would, be before anything else, tell everyone to go visit Edinburgh. It's gorgeous.
Cool. Well, thanks for the tips, and looking forward to hearing the questions you got. But before we get into those, let's go over our weekly wrap-up. The one-man team known as Seth, the man sitting in front of me right now, took the number one spot this week at Three Pepper Burrito Company with 69 points. At Bury Me Brewing Company, we got a babysitter, a team featuring our episode 11 guest, Mike. You missed
Michael.
It, yeah. You,
really?
You weren't there on Wednesday, so Mike, his team won.
He got a babysitter, so I'm assuming that he had Abby with him.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's his beautiful wife, Abby.
Uh-huh. And Gina and Brett. Some other local musicians that you know.
Yeah, well, yeah, Brett, Gina, I've known for quite a long time. Mm-hmm. But before that, I grew up hanging out with Brett Hendershot. He is from the Lee County Deep State. So he's, I consider myself very native, but he's even more nativer.
Interesting.
Yes.
Interesting. Okay, might have to throw some local questions at him next time I see him.
I will.
On Wednesday night, I pulled double duty, so I wasn't only at Bury Me Brewing Company. Also, subbed for Mark at Nice Guys Pizza since he was out of town over at Nice Guys. Two in the pink one with 72-point victory. And congratulations also to our winning team at number three last Thursday, the Squeaky Chairs, who earned 68 points that particular evening. And finally, at number three this week, Squeaky Chairs rivals We've Got Nothing took the top spot with 76 points. A hearty and sincere congratulations to them, and thank you to all the teams that came out to play No Nonsense Trivia Live this week in Southwest Florida. If you missed it, upcoming events include No Nonsense Trivia Challenge Monday, October 8th, the Three Pepper Burrito Company in downtown Fort Myers. You can face off against Seth there,
That's
most
right.
likely. A special 2-hour edition of No Nonsense Wednesday, October 10th. at Bury Me Brewing Company, and Thursday, October 11th at number 3, Craft Brews and Beer Bar in Cape Coral, Florida. You can find more information about all of our live events online at nononsensetrivia.com. All of the No Nonsense events are free to play. You can win prizes after every single round. Join us, won't you? And that's a wrap on the weekly wrap-up. We're going to take a short break now, followed by our first round of trivia with Seth. And we're back. Before we get started, we want to say thank you to all of our listeners who have taken the time to share the No Nonsense Trivia podcast on social media, as well as those... Ooh, I like that rhythm, that belly scratch rhythm you got there.
I'm trying to fill in for what's missing.
Thanks to those of you that have left reviews on iTunes. Thank you, Aaron. Thank you to those of you that have left us reviews on Stitcher, Spotify, other platforms, YouTube. Subscribe to us on YouTube. Got some new subscribers over there. Just go to our website, nononsense.fireside.fm, and at the top you'll see a link to all of the other platforms on which you can subscribe to us. Also, feel free to write in your comments, missed corrections, and rate my question submissions. I know Taylor wrote back in to clarify that they are not Canadian. So I don't know what they sent in a rate my question last week. And we suspected they might be Canadian because there's a strong Canadian bias in the questions, but just a topic of discussion, I guess. Anyways, if you have anything you want to write into us, we'll address it on the air. You can reach us at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com. And besides sharing, we want to give a thank you to everyone who signed up to support us on Patreon. More on that later. All right.
It's hard for me to imagine Canadians getting upset about anything.
Well, it wasn't upset. They're just fans writing in, listeners writing in.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
It's a correspondence. Taylor also wrote in about the Kool-Aid question, the first Rate My Question. So Taylor's actually the only person that's contributed to Rate My Question.
God, let's not say anything bad about him.
No, on multiple episodes. So thank you, Taylor. Thank you. We appreciate every piece of correspondence that you write in. Seth, I have a first question for you.
I am so ready for this. However, I do feel a small tinge of nervousness because I don't have Mark here as a backstop. Last time I was here,
yeah,
it was great because I knew if I wasn't going to get something, he was. He is a pro.
But this is your thing. You like going solo at the live trivia events.
I'm not doing it in front of a big giant crowd of listeners.
Right,
though,
right. I understand that. Yeah. You're doing great. Don't worry about it. But this is part of your thing is that you like to consider it alone. I've been to several events. I mean, if you would have come to Bury Me on Wednesday, would you have teamed up with We Got a Babysitter with Mike and the gang, or would you have gone solo?
Because of the numbers, no. I would have gone solo. Very, very rarely team up. Only, you know, in rare occasions do I. So I wouldn't have.
So this is just going to be a raw display of your abilities or lack thereof here. We'll get the truth here. All right, here's the music question.
It all comes out now.
What city's hot bands of the 1980s included Green River, the Throne Ups, and the Melvins? Green River, the Throne Ups, and the Melvins are the bands. What city were those the hot bands? Like, what city's scene was that, basically, the 1980s?
That city blew up pretty thoroughly in the 90s. But before that, they did have those three bands, and I recognize all of them. That would be Seattle.
That's correct.
Yeah.
It is Seattle.
Yeah.
What do you think about, you've heard, I'm sure, the legend and lore of Kurt Cobain being a roadie for the Melvins or auditioning for the Melvins. So you're familiar with this?
Yeah. Well, he did. I think he was. I'm not 100% sure, but I think he was the guy that went on to produce their 94 record, Houdini. He was a big fan of theirs for quite a few years. I mean, even before Nirvana blew up. But by 94, I think that was when it was released. I think he was helping to produce it. I'm not sure if he finished.
Who was helping
all of
to
it.
Produce it?
Kurt Cobain.
Was helping to produce a Melvins record.
Yeah, I think it was Houdini. I'm not 100% sure on that because obviously I don't have... You know,
right, so this is going back earlier. There's a famous urban legend that Kurt Cobain was a roadie for the Melvins, or that he auditioned for it. And actually, Buzz Osborne from the Melvins kind of debunked this. He says, in an interview. I always think it's funny that people say he roadied for us. Look at him. He couldn't lift himself out of bed. You think he could roadie for someone? We all hung out a lot, though. Chris Novoselic, another member of Nirvana, drove for us a while. Also a U.S. Congress person, right?
Really? I didn't
wasn't,
know that.
Wasn't he in Congress?
I think he ran for something. I don't know if he was.
I and, thought he served for a while.
And if he did, it would be state Congress, if it would be. I'm not
sure. Yeah, it might be California State Senate or something like that. Anyways, Buzz Osborne saying, no, they didn't have any money for roadies. It wasn't that scene. And as far as him trying out for the Melvins, he said they were never that pretentious to have tryouts for the band, but there was a time where a lot of those people were jamming together
frequently.
So there was some musical collaboration, but it wasn't anything like, you know, I'm sure there was just a lot of mutual admiration going on there.
Look at him. He looks like he couldn't lift anything. He's so scrawny. Would definitely go in line with the caustic attitude that King Buzzo, Buzz Osborne normally would have.
Yeah.
And, you know.
He doesn't really hold a lot back.
No, he doesn't.
Yeah.
He doesn't. He tells great stories. He's a really good storyteller. He's an interesting guy. Lots
of interviews on YouTube.
Yep.
About that scene, if you're interested in 90s grunge music, you know, a lot of people forget, you know, everybody says that Eddie Vedder is like the only surviving person of that era or singer, you know, frontman, but that's bullshit.
Oh, no way, man. You got the guys from Mudhoney are still alive.
Yeah.
You got, you know, Melvins, they're definitely still around. You got, you know.
Yeah, but Buzz especially is like you said, outspoken, great storyteller.
I got one little bit of trivia from that. There was, I'm not sure if they are the original Melvins, but the around 1989 iteration of the Melvins, it was Dale Crover, their drummer, and then their bass player. I think she's listed on the albums as Lorax, you know, kind of like the Dr. Seuss character.
Yeah.
But that was actually Shirley Temple Black's daughter. Remember Shirley Temple?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was her daughter.
Oh, interesting.
She was the bass player for that band. So, you know.
That is interesting.
So.
All right, so you got a question for me?
I do.
Sweet.
This is number one.
Uh-huh.
This is languages.
Okay.
Going along with my brother, who got a degree in linguistics
from
the University of Florida quite many years ago.
Interesting Thanksgiving conversations.
A lot.
I can only imagine you and a brother.
Oh, how about five? I have five brothers.
I'm sorry,
four brothers and one sister.
You come from that big gospel music family.
That big Christian family. Yeah. And this is...
Dad won a Grammy.
Dad won a Grammy, but a lot of people, they go, oh, yeah, he's from a Christian family, and they don't realize how much until I explain to them, you know, well, my brothers, I have one sister, her name's Amanda. We call her Amy. And then I have four brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And they are Matthew... Mark, Luke.
Right. Seth?
No, what's the next one?
Well,
you wouldn't know you're Jewish. I forgot.
Yeah.
Yeah, think of for the rest of us that are New Testament, you know, Matthew, Mark, Luke.
I wasn't paying much attention to Hebrew school either, I'll tell you. I wanted to go outside rollerblade.
Bad Hebrew kid. Matthew, Mark, Luke, John.
Bad Heeb.
Matthew, Mark. I'm not going any deeper than that, man. Matthew, I'm trying to picture you at Hebrew school.
Right, looking outside.
I wonder if they had rulers, switches. Don't get me a switch, boy.
My teacher was super chill.
Oh, okay.
His name was Ira. He was definitely seemed like a philosopher.
You know,
he just... really, you know, considered a lot about the stories of the Bible and stuff. He had zero charisma. And we were like listening to Nas records and stuff. And it wasn't like there was some divide. You know, there needed to be like a middle generation to kind of corral us Cape Coral Jewish kids.
The stark difference between Hebrew school and Sunday school that I went to. There was no chill in Sunday school. Man.
Yeah.
It was pretty hardcore. But just to get to the point, my brother's name.
Different strokes and all that.
Of course. It takes all kinds. Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, which for you folks that might have grown up in Christian, the limited part of our audience that might have grown up in a Christian family, you would recognize those first four names as the Gospels, four of Jesus's disciples.
Right. Your
and
name, Seth, is the other child of
Adam and Eve.
Adam and Eve.
Yes.
That's right. I remember that. Okay,
right.
So that was a question.
The
Mark,
the one that went on to produce many sons and daughters and lived upwards of 800 years. Of course,
nice.
According to
I got some big shoes to fill there.
Oh man, I'll never do it.
All right, so let's hear your question.
Go ahead. This is like I said, a language question. Mm-hmm. I think it's pretty simple. It's what is the most widely spoken First Nation language in North America?
most widely spoken First Nation language.
Yes, what some people would say is Native American language.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sorry, can I have it one more time? It's still spoken?
Yes.
The number one?
Yes, it is the number one most widely spoken First Nation language in North America still.
Let's see here. So we are in Florida and have a Seminole bias, but I don't think, I don't think a lot of First Nation Seminoles, I don't think they're speaking a lot of Seminole these days. But, you know, I don't know why. I'm guessing Iroquois. That's going to be my guess, because I know that a lot, there's been, especially in the North West region, there's a lot of names that are still used to this day that represent, like, I believe Canada is an Iroquois phrase that means the village, if I remember correctly. So I'm gonna go with Iroquois.
Iroquois would be more around the Northeast, and it would go up into Canada. And you know, all across the United States, we still use First Nation names. For instance, you know, Caloosahatchee. Mm-hmm. You know, if you go north, Chattahoochee, things like that. And when you go out west, you see a lot of Native American names out there. And out west is where you would find the language that is still most widely spoken that is of Native American origin. That's the Navajo people.
The Navajo.
There are still over 170,000 Navajo speakers in the United States.
Well, that's a pretty good number. Yeah. That's good. A lot of languages are dying off these days.
A lot.
Yeah. And
in California, there's a lot of First Nation languages out there. That's probably the most diverse area. And they're all dying off at a very fast pace.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even in South America, I believe there were some fires in Brazil recently that destroyed a museum, including the only lasting evidence of some of their ancient cultures and early languages and stuff. It's all gone now.
Really?
Yeah, that was just a couple weeks ago.
I got to look up on that.
So anyway, on a lighter subject,
I thought that one was pretty light.
Yeah.
I mean,
no. Yeah. Yeah.
Lee drug it into a dark place. Yeah.
You know, I've got a cynic's brain, but, question two for you is a food question.
Oh, yeah. I love food.
Let's see here. Have you ever had carpetbagger steak?
I have never had carpetbagger steak, nor have I ever heard of it.
Okay. Well, what I'm going to ask you is, what seafood is stuffed in your beef, which is a great euphemism, by the way. What seafood is stuffed in your beef when you order carpetbagger steak?
Typically, whenever, you know, you stuff a meat, I think, in cooking with some sort of seafood, it comes from the crustacean family. So I would guess that it would be either be shrimp or crab. And I'm thinking because of the size of the shrimp, it would be more difficult. And the fact that you can shred up crab pretty easily, I'm going to go with crab.
Would your answer still be crab if I told you that this was a popular dish in Australia and New Zealand? Does that change anything?
And it's a seafood.
It's a seafood. Carpetbagger steak. It's a luxury dish. It was popular in the 1950s and 1960s. So that's a time period where if you ever come across a cookbook from the 1950s and 1960s, people went fucking crazy.
Damn.
During those time periods. They were putting ham in Jell-O. And
tasty.
Yeah. I mean, maybe. You know, I think I have had it and it was interesting.
Ham and Jell-O?
It was like green Jell-O and ham.
Ham on Jell-O.
You know, I don't know.
If you're going to say luxury seafood, the only thing I can go with from there is lobster.
That's another good guess. It's none of those, though.
It's none of those things.
I'll tell you, it is oysters.
Oysters.
Oysters. Oh, so okay. There's pockets in the meat, and then they stuff them, the oysters in that, and hold them in place with toothpicks.
I was right about the crustaceans.
And it's broiled. You were right.
Yeah,
right. But I don't know if I've ever had cooked oysters. I think I've only had raw oysters.
Really?
You know, now that I'm thinking about it, I've had fried oysters before.
Okay.
Like deep fried oysters.
Oh, Scotty Martin, a friend of ours that lives out on Pine Island, used to have a longtime friend of ours had oyster roasts out at his house. They'd get oysters out there on Pine Island, and he'd have
I never went over to one of those.
Oh, they're so good.
Yeah.
They're really, I like them. I don't really like raw oysters, but before that, I don't know, you go to the Publix, you can get smoked oysters out of the tin. That's what I always grew up eating. Everybody hated me because they make you smell bad.
Yeah.
But
I think I'm okay with that. It's worth the risk if something's delicious enough, you know. That's just a byproduct.
It's always better when it comes from the can.
Get an Altoid or something. It's like you just carry cans around with you.
Take a shower.
Eat one out of All right. So a second question from you, if you don't mind.
Okay. Number two is a science question.
Okay.
Question's a little lengthy, but I think you're going to enjoy this one. The solar eclipse of August 21st, 2017 was a total solar eclipse that spanned the entire contiguous United States, passing from the Pacific Ocean to the Atlantic Ocean. The next solar eclipse, total solar eclipse, to occur in the U.S. will be in April 8th, 2024. Where will it start in the U.S.?
Oh, interesting. Where will it start in the U.S.? So the first place that you'll be able to see it?
That you will be able to experience the total solar eclipse in 2024.
So it's probably shifted a little bit, a tad.
I don't think it's going over the same spot.
No, really? You said in the whole United States? Or did you say in Florida?
I said in 2017, that solar eclipse, spanned the entire contiguous United States, meaning it came in, I think it was Oregon, and then it exited either Georgia or South Carolina, but
it went the other way.
No, it went all the way across the lower 48. It hit the lower 48, it just went across.
Yeah.
Now, in 2024, we're going to have another total solar eclipse, but it won't come in at Oregon. There's your hint. There are 47 other states that it could enter at. Which one will it enter at? Or the where the first state that you will be able to experience the total solar eclipse on April 8th, 2024?
I don't know. You know, it would be amazing if this is the answer, so I think I'm just gonna guess Hawaii. Because it's such a small, finite place.
I'm going to give you another chance because Hawaii is not part
of the contiguous
48. Yes.
Right. So Alaska's out too then.
Alaska is out. Hawaii is out. It has to be one of the other states that, you know, form what we call the lower 48.
Yeah.
And not, obviously not Oregon again. I told
you
that.
Right. So that leaves California and I mean, I don't even see, this is how little I know about eclipses. There's no way that you could see it in a landlocked, like first in a landlocked state, is there?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Think about it. When the first one came across, it came across Oregon, but then the next state would have possibly been, you know, Idaho.
Damn.
You know, and that's a landlocked state. Yeah. That would have been.
So it would be interesting, too, if it was an East Coast country, because that would go against against the grain.
East Coast state?
Yeah.
You think?
They say East Coast country.
Yeah.
Oops. I guess they're all East Coast countries, technically.
They're their own little republics or commonwealth. Or, go ahead.
Yeah.
What do you think it is?
You know what? Just for shits and gigs, I'm going to say Florida.
You'd be about four states off. It's Texas.
Okay.
I'd think you'd pick a big one where it had a big chance of going across to Texas. It's going to come.
That's a good,
it's actually
going to
move from the south and go across Mexico. And then come in through Texas around the Laredo, San Antonio area, about the middle of Texas.
Wow.
And I don't plan to miss it. I think I'm going to go out there and see it.
Cool.
Definitely.
Look at it without your glasses on like our president did.
I'll come back and tell you what I see.
So you won't be able to see anything. So that's April 8th, 2024, you said?
That is on April 8th, 2024.
Mark your calendars, ladies and gentlemen. We will be doing a special solar eclipse trivia.
I'll tell you what, we saw the partial one here in Florida, and it was pretty neat.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. It was crazy. It felt like you were looking at, like, living in HDR, you know?
There was a weird
Everything
light.
Everything was high contrast.
There was a very strange light that day. I remember I had pictures of my daughter looking up with the glasses on. It was a very strange light.
Yeah. All right, question number three for you is a movies question. 1980s movies. How familiar are you with the movie Ferris Bueller's Day Off?
Extremely.
Okay, so I think there's a good chance you might get this then. In the movie Ferris Bueller's Day Off, what is Ferris's sister's name?
I can tell you who played her.
Who's that?
I can tell you it's Jennifer Grey.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Give me a second.
She played Ferris's sister.
She was very jealous of Ferris, of Matthew Broderick.
She got a car. He got a computer.
That's right. He got a computer.
But why should he have everything?
The rumor was that Charlie Sheen stayed up all night to get ready to play that character in the police station.
Oh, you can tell.
It definitely looked like it. Looked like he might have partied for a little while before. Knowing Charlie Sheen, I'm sure that wasn't an inaccurate account. Oh, man. Give me a second. A little bit of
quiet here. You can go to your dark place. Seth, this is your dark place.
My dark place is telling me it was, it starts with an S?
No.
Well, don't give me any hints. Oh, man. I want to keep this on an even playing field. Was it Judy? That's my answer, Judy. I'm wrong, but I can't think of it.
You're so close.
And I don't want to eat up our time.
I'm just going to tell you.
Go ahead.
It's Jeannie.
Jeannie. That's
Jennifer,
right.
Jeannie.
Yes.
Jennifer and Jeannie.
Oh. Yep. She later on went to play a baby, of course, in Dirty Dancing.
Right.
Yeah, nobody puts her in a corner.
She was not able to fully enjoy the success of that role. That was her breakout role. Because I don't know if you've heard about her and Matthew Broderick, but they were vacationing in Ireland. And
I've heard this story.
They were secretly dating each other. This was after, filming Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Right.
And Matthew Broderick.
Car accident?
Yep. They got into a car accident. A local mother. This was in Ireland,
yes.
If I remember correctly.
I heard the same story.
Yeah. I wonder if Mark stopped at this spot to pay his respects.
Laid
on his
a
trip.
Wreath or some flowers.
Yeah,
because yeah,
his mother
it,
and her daughter died. It was a head-on collision.
Jesus.
And so a couple months after that, Dirty Dancing came out, and she said she was experiencing incredible survivor's guilt.
I would. Lee, always bringing it back to a dark place.
Yeah, if you, that's the thing. Like, if anything related to Hollywood has some kind of tragic outcome, usually, if it's famous. If it's famous enough, that's.
Is Natalie Wood, James Dean, or Matthew Broderick? Yeah. It all ends in a dark place, especially when Lee's involved.
I think there's a podcast called You Must Remember This that is about these types of stories. If you're into old Hollywood tales of woe and tragedy and stuff. Check that out. They have a really interesting 16-part Charles Manson series. It's like a separate podcast where they detail his whole life. I mean, if you love trivia, this podcast has so many connections that you don't think about that Manson has to pop culture, including like the Beach Boys. I almost said Beastie Boys. That would be crazy.
You got to fight for your right to murder.
Right. But anyways, Jeannie is her name.
Jeannie was her name.
Jeannie was her name in Ferris
Bueller's
Day Off.
I dream of Jeannie in the light brown car accident. Yeah. All right.
So what is your third question?
Third question. I'm so sorry. Hopefully. Boy, we're going to a dark place on this one. This is the dark episode.
Music dark timeline episode with Seth.
Question number three. Yeah. It's a music question. I really hope you get this one. I think you can. You send me A Change Is Gonna Come. And Bring It On Home to Me are a string of hit singles by this soul, gospel, and R&B singer that was shot to death in a Los Angeles hotel room in December of 1964.
I have a first impulse.
Okay.
And then I had a second impulse. Okay. So the second impulse that I think is wrong.
Okay.
So can you read the song names again?
Yep.
A Change Is Gonna Come.
You Send Me. A Change Is Gonna Come.
Yeah.
And Bring It On Home to Me are a string of hit singles by this soul gospel R&B singer that was shot to death in a Los Angeles hotel room in December of 1964.
1964.
Under very dark circumstances. Of course, it's going to be a murder or a shooting. It's dark anyway.
Why did you say that?
Go ahead.
Why did you say that? Because now I'm doubting my second doubt. And maybe that's...
You're doubting your doubt. Well, that's a double negative.
Yeah. I'm trusting myself is what I'm trying to say.
Right.
I'm trusting my impulse now to change my answer. My first... So first of all, A Change Is Gonna Come is the only one that I can actually hear in my head. The other two I can't pull up right now mentally. But I'm still having trouble deciphering between two different singers on this, and I'll be really embarrassed if the answer is neither of these. But first is I know that Marvin Gaye was shot and killed and by his father. I do not know if that took place. You said it took place in a hotel, the incident you're describing?
This was in a Los Angeles hotel room in December of 1964.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's even too early. That's probably just about the right time for Marvin Gaye. It might be a little early, though. The other name that I was thinking of is Sam Cooke. But I'm pretty sure, I don't really know. I can't say for 100%, but my instinct is saying that he was shot and killed, too. But since that detail, but see, that's the thing. In my mind, A Change Is Gonna Come. For whatever reason, I filed that under Sam Cooke. It might be a Marvin Gaye song, but because the detail is hazier on his death, this sounds to me more like it's Marvin Gaye. I can't identify the other songs. I know Marvin Gaye did What's Going On. That's like one that I know off the top of my head that is kind of an iconic song of his. So I'm going to say Marvin Gaye.
Man, you should have gone with your gut.
It was Sam Cooke?
It was Sam Cooke. I was so proud of you for coming up as that with that as one of the two, you know?
If I remember the details.
Marvin Gaye didn't, he wasn't killed until the mid-80s. His father shot him. He was a preacher, and he killed him, and that was in the 80s. And, you know, in the 1960s, he didn't even do Ain't No Mountain High Enough with Tammy Terrell until I think the late 60s. That was Sam Cooke, man.
Oh, just walked myself right
I
out of it.
So, when you said Sam Cooke, I was so proud. I was like, oh my God, he knows it. That's great. But you missed it.
And even the song title, it was Sam Cooke.
This song.
I knew that was a Sam Cooke song. I do that too much. I walk myself out of it. I don't know how to prevent that.
You did that time.
Does that happen to you?
Oh, it happens to me all the time. I'm sure that you've read stubs, answer sheets that I have written where I've crossed something out because I second-guessed myself, and you've read it and said, he was right the first time. Sure
you've
done that.
It doesn't happen that frequently, though.
But it's happened. Right. I guarantee it has. That question was written with a buddy of ours in mind, me and Patrick. You know, remember old Patrick?
Mm-hmm.
Me and him used to talk about Sam Cooke all the time.
I really like that question precisely for the reason of what just happened to me.
Yeah.
You know, there's two stories that are vaguely similar.
Vaguely, and, yes. And they are vaguely similar.
And if you don't know the fine details that are given as hints, they can put you in that quandary. And
like
that
I said, I'm proud of you for knowing Sam Cooke.
Thanks, man.
Yeah,
thanks.
I am.
Hopefully, I would have, but you don't have the luxury of having a team to kind of pull you back from that.
No.
You're just going without, you're going commando in a sense.
I like that it's all on me.
All right. That wraps up round number one. We're going to take a short break here and be back in round number two with some more questions. Okay, we're back in round number two, but before we do that, it's time for our miscorrections. Do you know the song?
Miscorrections.
Ooh, dramatic. Dramatic. First miscorrection, we already talked about Taylor's email in the previous section. If you want to email us, nononsensetrivia@gmail.com, send in your miscorrections, send in your rate my questions. Mike from the We Got a Babysitter team and our episode 11 guest He sent in a video of Jaco Pastorius performing the chicken.
Hey, now.
Yeah, so now I'm familiar that he is an incredible bassist. It was some incredibly funky, mind-blowing shit.
That's Florida funk right there.
Yeah, so I'll put a... Oh, is he from Florida?
Fort Lauderdale, baby.
Whoa! Wait. That's awesome. All right, I'm going to put a link to that video on the show notes for this episode. And then another correction that is very timely, you being here... on the last episode, we had a question about James. I won't give away the answer. The question was if you add the letter A to the end of a president's name, you get a popular type of mid 17th century music. And I said nobody got that right at the live trivia, but you did indeed get that right.
I was wringing my brain, taking every single president's name and putting an A at the end of it, going, you know, just running through them, every one of them. And, you know, Martin Van Buren, you know, didn't work. William Henry Harrison didn't work.
People put some of those in.
Yeah, and I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, so I got up to the most recent ones, and there was actually a name four presidents with the name James, and I knew three of them, but I forgot about Jimmy Carter. And I got to his name and I said, Carterra. Maybe Carterra is
Carterra.
A dance that we didn't know about. And I was getting ready to write it down, and all of a sudden the name James K. Polk jumped into my head, and I was like, Polka. Oh, that's a dance, Polka. So, yeah.
Yes. So, correction on that. Seth did get that right, correcting the record from the last episode.
Not nitpicking.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, like I said, if you have any other corrections, if we say something that doesn't sound right, you know better, write it in, fact check us, send in your own questions. We can read on Rate My Question segments, et cetera, et cetera. Let's go ahead and get into our next round. So I went first last time, so why don't you throw a question to me so I have to open this up. I like that you got the sheet. That's good. Seth is like 60 years old.
Oh, God. I knew you were going to say it. Gray hair, reading glasses on, looking at a piece of paper.
He's maybe the upper limits of the Xennial generation.
I heard you having this conversation in earlier podcasts, and I'm sitting there thinking, Xennial, I've been trying to forget the fact that my generation that I've always been told that I was part of is Generation X.
Right.
And, you know, anybody
were you resistant to that?
I was trying to forget it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't really care because...
So you're like me, but even more advanced, for lack of a better term.
I think that it's so trivial. Trivial. I think it's so silly just to, you know, coming up with these names for people in their ages. Age ain't nothing but a number. Oh, my God, I sound like an old person. But no, I mean, I came in here, I wrote everything down. I'm using my reading glasses because I'm old as hell. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I definitely, when you called me up and said, can you come in and do this again?
Yeah.
And then I sat down to write some questions. Man, I developed a newfound respect for you and Mark having to come up with all of these. I mean, you do what, like 20 on Wednesday night alone, and then you're doing seven. How many of them on Monday night?
I'm doing like 70 a week.
God, man. And it took me, I mean, I thought I'd knock them all out in an hour. It took me like 2.5 hours to come up with seven questions.
Right.
I'd come up with a good question, but then to confirm it and go over it and make sure that it was palatable to, you know, listening audiences, I had to, you know, comb through and get my information and research. And it just takes a long time. So
it takes a long time. But what you do is, and this is a little tip for any quiz masters out there that are looking to start their own trivia nights or figure out some ways to get good trivia, not just like Google, you know, trivia generator and then read what's off the top. That's all well and good at first, but eventually you're going to want to develop out your shit a little bit. And what I would recommend doing is when you just have research time. You say, for 4 hours, all I'm doing is researching, reading, and writing basic versions of questions. And then what you do is you build a little repository for yourself so that when it's time to program out a night, you've already done all the hard work of researching. You're not in research mode. You're just in... what is my, you know, what are people feeling lately? What kind of questions are they succeeding at? What would be challenging?
Relevant. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I learned something big, man. Wikipedia is not a be-all, end-all for getting answers.
No, no, no.
You have to research so much more than just looking it up on Wikipedia. It's a job, man.
Yeah. I mean, basically what you want to do is you want to put on your library hat. You want to become a librarian. You know, like all you're looking for is credible sources and interesting facts.
And make sure that they're presented in the right way. I mean, it's really easy to write a question wrong.
I picked the Ferris Bueller one out of my head. I'll admit that. I didn't have to do too much reading on that one. But, you know, sometimes if you're in a pinch, but some of these other things, you know, you just come across these interesting facts as you're out and about.
You got these 80s movies swimming around up there.
Yep. 'Tis the season. I feel like October is kind of dominated by 80s movies, horror or not. You know, it's just kind of the thing.
But, just this time of the year evokes nostalgia.
Yeah. Anyway, we're getting off track here. What do we got here for this first question?
All right. My first question for this round is a science and biology question. And it's pretty, well, the question itself is pretty short and pretty simple, and I hope you get it.
Mm-hmm.
Chyme.
I hope I do too.
C-H-Y-M-E. Chyme is produced in what organ of the body?
Chyme?
Chyme.
C-H-Y-M-E?
C-H-Y-M-E is produced in what organ of the body?
Chyme. Wow. Well, I've never heard this word before, so that's not good.
Oh, man. It is an odd word.
Got the heart, the lungs, the stomach. Man, the stomach, that sounds like some stomach stuff. Chyme, like some kind of bile or something. But bile is, I mean, there's so many things in the digestive system cooperating to make things. There's, you know, the liver, man, I'm forgetting one right now, too. I'm forgetting a couple, probably. Chyme, that doesn't sound like the liver or the kidneys. Maybe it is the kidneys. Chyme. It's chyme to answer, isn't it?
It's chyme to answer.
I'm going to go with my instinct, stomach.
Your instincts are very good.
Yeah?
Yes, because it is, in fact, the stomach. Chyme is a thick semi-fluid mass of partially digested food and digestive secretions that is formed in the stomach and the intestine during digestion. In the stomach, digestive juices are formed by the gastric glands, and these secretions include the enzyme pepsin, which breaks down proteins and hydrochloric acid.
Let's see, pepsin.
When you chew your food and it goes down your throat and into your stomach, it is mixed together.
You're supposed to chew that shit? I usually just suck it right down.
You're like an alligator. You just chomp off a big bit and swallow it whole. Little do you know that Lee can actually digest the shell of a tortoise.
It took many years of practice, but my body is
when you chew up your food and it goes down your throat, it mixes with enzymes in your stomach and it creates what's called chyme.
Okay.
That's gross.
Yeah.
Taking us to a dark place.
It's pretty gross. Inside the body is very dark. I don't think any light gets in. You ever think about that? Like when you're talking, that's just when all the light gets in your body.
I just like to quote Nelson Muntz. What's inside you? Black stuff.
All right. Here is a first question for you. It is a etymology. The source of...
Word source.
Yeah, word source. Yes. This is a nautical phrase.
Love these.
We just recently passed Talk Like a Pirate Day. Mm-hmm. Totally blew by me. I didn't celebrate it. I didn't realize till after it was over.
Real quick.
Yeah.
I refuse to recognize Talk Like a Pirate Day until the government officially recognizes my holiday for one day out of the year, the Walk Like Fred Sanford Day.
Who's Fred Sanford?
Oh, God. No. Sanford and Son?
Oh, okay.
Red Fox?
Yeah.
Walk Like Red Fox?
I'm not familiar with the... This must be a Generation X thing.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. For those of you that know who Red Fox or Fred Sanford is, imagine walking into work one day and everyone walking around like Fred Sanford. It would be a great holiday.
I don't know, man. I'm more into Talk Like a Pirate now that you're talking about this.
I know, but I
can feel my allegiance shifting.
Okay. All right.
I just, anyway.
Go ahead.
Yes.
That's going to be funny to somebody.
Back to our... Somebody over the age of 80.
Thank you.
Sanford and Son. All right, here it is. In the nautical expression, shiver me timbers, the word timbers originally referred to what? In the phrase, shiver me timbers, what are the timbers that are being shivered?
I am going to... Tim Clark, where are you?
Yeah, this is, question is dedicated to our boat friend, Tim.
Oh, okay.
Our boat friend in Maine.
Okay, I don't
That's right,
know.
We have a boat friend in Maine.
We have a boat friend.
He builds them.
God, Tim left like 20 years ago and said, I'm going to Maine to build boats. And I was like, wow, Jesus. I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, dude, I'd be back in like 6 months. I'm like, you know, it's been 20 years and he's up in Maine building boats. I'm like, damn. He's really, there's a guy that, man, set a course and went off and pulled it off, man. There's a,
yeah.
Props to Tim.
He looks like he leads a pretty unique, amazing life, though.
Yeah, yeah. God, I picture Walt Whitman up in the woods hanging out with Tim.
Mm-hmm. He went up there to live deliberately.
He did, man. He has his own company now, Garrett and Ezell or something. Or what is it? Clark and Ezell or something like that.
I'm not sure.
It's a yacht. It's a restoration or company up there.
So what is it?
It's fantastic. What's I'm it thinking Clark and Ezell. Am I saying it correctly? But it,
probably.
I'm
we'll
not
put
looking
a link
at
to
it.
The show notes. Yeah. if that's a thing.
But they put up. He puts up these pictures online of these fantastic boats that they work on, and I see the pictures of the boats, and I see the pieces, and I don't know the names of them. I know every other name for almost every other name for the different parts on pieces of a boat, not specifically sailboats, but he works on. But as you are looking at a partially constructed craft, you see as it goes down the middle of the hull, there are the parts that go up the sides. To me, they always look like ribs. They look like ribs. Of course, I relate everything to ribs because I love ribs. But I'm going to think that the timbers are ribs. That's my answer.
Yes. I mean, technically, it's the whole hull of the ship. Any part that's wood that would, it would splinter due to rough waters or cannon fire or something, it would shake the ship. And that's when the expression would be used, shiver me timbers. You know, we need to do these things. Shiver me timbers.
Oh.
The hull of the ship is coming apart.
Okay.
So, yeah, you're absolutely right.
Sort of right.
You got specific with it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, just generally the hull of the ship.
Okay. There you go.
Yeah. It's good, man. All right. So do you have a second question for me?
I have a second question. Please disregard as the paper crackles into the microphone.
I like it. It's it's kind of a rustic vibe on today's podcast with Seth here since... You know, the old man's in the office.
Oh, my God. All right. This one's for you, man. This is a great one.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, my brother's
he
over.
He knows about 1980s Seattle bands, people. That's how old he is.
Oh, God. That's not that old, man. All right. And this one's with you in mind. Also, my brothers, they were all involved in wrestling in high school. So I had to kind of go back with something that they probably don't know half of this.
I have a brief wrestling watching history, so I might have something here.
All right, the second question for this round. An American won the freestyle 100 kilogram division in the 1996 Atlanta Summer Olympics. That same guy in 1998 signed a contract with the WWF. He was later named...
This is right in my zone.
This is in your zone.
This
That's why,
my
yeah.
zone.
Okay.
That's why I started watching.
He was later named Wrestler of the Decades for the 2000 aughts.
Wow.
What's his name?
Wow. Wrestler of the Decade. So his accomplishment in 96?
He won the gold medal for the United States in the 100 kilogram division in freestyle wrestling.
All right. So I've got two. Again, I've got two names that are coming to my head.
Come on, Lee.
And the first one.
It's not Marvin Gaye.
No, it's not. But it is Sexual Chocolate. Mark Henry, who participated in a lot of strength championships, like weightlifting, which is not wrestling.
Okay.
Which is why I'm moving away from this answer and over to somebody who often came to the ring wearing a gold medal Mr. All-American Kurt Angle.
You went to the right place.
Kurt Angle.
Oh, yeah.
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 I went to Mark Henry first because I remembered he is very accomplished. I think he's won like 5 world championships. Here's what it is. Mark Henry, if you add up all of his lifts, his top lifts, they amount to more than anybody else who's hit those strides in recorded history. So he does have something special about him. But
I didn't have a chance to say which one is your answer, but I know you were going to go with Kurt Angle.
Yeah, it's Kurt Angle. Yeah, Kurt Angle for sure. Yeah. Yeah. He wore either the medal or a replica, you know.
He did.
And he had a really good feud with Stone Cold Steve Austin.
That is correct.
You might see a signed photo of Steve Austin here in the studio.
Jesus.
My pride and joy.
Wow. My wife and I have a picture of Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Nice.
Who used to carry a 2x4 into the ring along with an American flag.
Oh!
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
Oh, it's just the...
That's a little before 98. He was like late 80s, early 90s. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Here's question number 2 for you, sir.
Let's have it.
What is the only river that flows both north and south of the equator? It's one river... North and it flows both ways.
And south.
Mm-hmm.
Of the equator. Does it flow from north to south or south to north? Is that what you're trying to say?
It goes both ways.
It flows north to south and south to north.
Yes.
Is that possible?
Yes.
Oh my God. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Would you like a continent to help you?
I'm going to take whatever hints I can.
Okay, I'm going to give you a continent.
Go ahead.
Africa.
Okay. I know it's not the Nile because the Nile's way too far north of it. I think it ends in Lake Victoria. No, it starts in Lake Victoria because the Nile runs from south to north. And Lake Victoria, I believe, is still pretty far north of the equator. So it's got to be further south than there. And I'm thinking, let's see, what line the equator starts to run through either Nigeria or...
Namibia.
Zaire. No, I'm kidding. Namibia. No.
I'm just memeing.
Yeah. I'm trying to think, what are the names of the rivers in that area? And I think it's in Zaire. My guess is going to be that it goes through there. And you're going to say the name of a river that I've heard before that's running through Zaire. I can't think of anything, man. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm going to give you one more hint. It's the second longest river in Africa.
Yeah.
And it's also the deepest river in the world. Another fact about it. You're just going to kick yourself.
I'm going to kick myself, yeah.
No guesses?
No, hold on. Give me them.
Yep.
No, I can't think of it.
I'm going to give you one more hint.
The hint's not going to help because I...
Hold on.
Go ahead.
Are you familiar with the work of Michael Crichton, the author?
A little bit.
He wrote a book
uh-huh.
that has the name of this river as the title. About a gorilla.
I don't know.
It's not coming to you?
No, it's not coming to me, and I don't want to kill our time. Go ahead.
The Congo.
The Congo.
The Congo.
Which is Zaire, which is, yeah.
Close, man. Yeah, that's just a brain fart. That's an on-the-spot brain fart.
What was Zaire before it was Zaire? It was the Democratic Republic of the Congo.
Right.
Yeah, man. That's terrible.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I'm kicking myself.
Okay, so I believe it's your turn to ask me your third question of this round.
Yes.
All right, okay. Let's have it.
This is a political history question. It's not too far from the 80s.
Okay.
Michael Dukakis mm-hmm. was the Democratic nominee
yeah.
in the election of 1988.
Yeah.
Before this, he was governor of what state?
Ooh. Now, I believe I've mentioned Dukakis on the show
an
answer at some point. Was that during our last episode?
I don't know if it was the last episode, but I think it was on your last episode,
the episode 7 when you were a guest.
I don't think you brought it up then. I think this was I think Mark asked the question.
Yeah.
Who was the running mate of Walter Mondale, and I think you thought it was Mike Dukakis, but it actually turned out to be. I remember screaming into my headphones, Geraldine Ferraro.
Yeah.
And but
I caught a lot of shit from my friends for that.
That was 1984. This was 1988. And it doesn't hurt to tell you that the person that he lost to was
Ronald. It was George Bush.
George H.W. Bush.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah. W's father.
Okay.
But what state?
I almost said Ronnie Reagan.
Was he the governor of?
I really don't know. This is going to be a shot in the dark. I'm going to say California.
Is that your answer?
Yeah.
You'd be incorrect.
New Hampshire?
Yeah, that's closer. A little later on, there was a guy that was the governor of this state. His name was Mitt Romney.
Massachusetts.
Yes, it was.
Okay.
Massachusetts. Yep.
Yeah, I just had no idea. If you had included the Romney as a hint, I would have probably
that would have been a dead giveaway.
Yeah. You always wish for those kind of hints. The ones that make it right. All right.
I actually remember that election.
When you see Stranger Things, it's like a spitting image of
childhood. It just feels like I'm turning on HBO in 1982. Yeah.
All right, here is...
It's funny you say that, because every time that I watch the beginning of Stranger Things, it just makes me think, oh my God, this is just like what... When that opening sequence comes on, I'm like, this is HBO in the early 80s. Right. This is what it looked like.
They nailed it.
They did. They nailed it, totally.
And the font looks just like a old Stephen King paperback with that foil-embossed text. I have an 80s question for you, actually. We're going to stay in the 80s here. It is a movies question. What 1983 sci-fi adventure film was shot under the working title Blue Harvest to keep fans and journalists away from the set? 1983 sci-fi adventure film. It was shot under the working title Blue Harvest.
I am about 80% sure that this is... Because I went to the opening weekend. I went to opening weekend. I'm like 80% sure that it's Return of the Jedi. And that's what I'm going to go with for sure. It was Return of the Jedi.
You're absolutely correct. Woo-hoo! It was Return of the Jedi.
Yep. I was there. Yep. Opening weekend with I got a t-shirt with a Gamorrean guard on it.
That's awesome.
And I wore that to opening weekend because we were all just, man, we were amped to go see that movie. Everybody, yeah. Beetlejuice.
How did you know about the Blue Harvest thing?
I think I've heard that like in antiquity. Going way back, you know, that they had to have, you know, years later when I, you know, geeked out on everything Star Wars and would read it and eat it up, not just being a third grader going to the movie. But I remember hearing about they had to give it a working title, and that would make sense. I remember it coming out in 1983, and there was such a hype surrounding Return of the Jedi, you know, my brain is thinking, well, they have to give it a working title to keep it, you know, under wraps there out in California working on it. So
interestingly, a lot of people, I asked this at Bury Me, and a couple teams wrote down Family Guy Star Wars special. And I was like, that's weird that multiple teams wrote that down. And so I asked, and apparently they used the title Blue Harvest
as an episode title for something.
And double interestingly, away from Family Guy, it was Blue Harvest was supposed to be a horror movie, and the tagline was horror beyond imagination. And there was a point at which, when they were filming the Sarlacc pit scenes, the sandstorms were bad enough that cast and crew were confined to their trailers, and they actually discussed making this movie, Blue Harvest, actually filming it in like 2 days. and they asked George Lucas if he would write a script for it. And he said, sure, why not? Roger Corman used to shoot movies in 2 days.
Absolutely, he did. If you watched those movies, you'd know that they were...
Yeah.
They didn't have much production time.
Do you know what one of those Roger Corman movies that was shot in 2 days were? It was 1960, and it was remade in the 80s with Rick Moranis. What is a Roger Corman movie?
I don't know.
That was shot in 2 days, 1960.
My mind is a flurry from
You know
all the
Rick
questions.
Moranis, right?
Oh, of course. Yeah. Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Mm-hmm.
Second City Television, Great White North.
So do you know any remakes that he's made?
In the 80s?
Yeah, that were originally Roger Corman movies.
Was he in Inner Space? No, that wasn't him.
That wasn't him.
That was, what's his name? It was a Steve Martin special recently. Oh, God. No, I don't.
It's got a talking giant...
Oh, yes. Plant. Little Shop of Horrors.
Yes.
Yeah.
Roger Corman shot a version of Little Shop of Horrors in 1960. Yep. And do you know who was in it?
I don't remember.
In a bit role?
I don't.
Jack Nicholson.
No way. 1960?
Jack Nicholson plays...
Was he a teenager?
He's really young.
Yeah.
And he plays this insane character named Wilbur Force, who goes to the dentist, and he wants a lot of work done on his teeth. And he's like, hey, I got all this stuff. I got 11 cavities, and I need work done. And the guy's like, you know, go wait in the lobby. You know, he's trying to like cover
it's
up
like
what
he's
doing.
Like a masochist or something?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And he slips in and he's like, oh, no drugs, please. It's hilarious. Look up Jack Nicholson.
Nicholson.
Jack Nicholson. Little Shop of Horrors. Okay, so that is question number 3.
Yep.
The final question of this round. We're going to take our final short break, and we'll be back with some final questions.
Damn.
And we're back. Got some Patreon news. Thanks again to Mikey J for his Patreon support, our first Patreon supporter. Thank you to our newest Patreon supporter, Lucas D of Fort Myers, our first patron in the proverbial Lightkeeper tier. We send you many thanks and blessings from Rumpelsnailskin. Lucas, keep an eye on your mailbox. We'll be getting some stuff to you in the mail as part of your Patreon membership at that tier. It's called the proverbial Lightkeeper tier because it helps us keep the lights on, but we're still only about halfway there as far as our hosting fees goes. So if you're a listener who can spare a few bucks a month to help support the show, please visit us at nononsense.fireside.fm and click the support button in the main menu. It'll take you to our Patreon page where you can see our current pledge levels and goals. Thanks, Mikey. Thank you, Lucas. And let's go ahead and get into some final questions with Seth. Seth, I have a history question for you. I know you love history.
I'm stoked.
Yeah. This history question has to do with the brother of one John Wilkes Booth, who, of course, is the man who assassinated Abraham Lincoln.
Right.
Yeah. American stage actor Edwin Booth, the brother of John Wilkes Booth, was best known for his performances in what Shakespearean play? This was kind of the highlight of the Booth family. For a while, until
it was their name
was
before murder.
Yeah.
Okay.
There was an association of Edwin's Booth portrayal of a character in what Shakespearean play?
I can't help but think that there's probably a certain level of irony attached to this. And if you're going to go with murder of a statesman or a leader, I don't think you get any better than Macbeth as far as Shakespeare goes. You could say Hamlet, but I just think that Macbeth is too strong when it comes to the irony of the fact that his brother murdered a head of state. So I'm going to go with Macbeth.
Unfortunately, that's wrong.
Ugh.
I do like your approach, but it was wrong to go with your instinct on that. The irony would be too sweet in this case. It was Hamlet.
Oh,
actually,
man.
Hamlet. So you kind of got pulled in the right direction.
Second answer, obviously,
a lot of teams wrote down Macbeth.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah.
Yep.
I thought it would keep up with that. Thought you would go this way with it. You went the yeah. other. See how you did that?
You gotta, yeah. I mean, see sometimes you ask questions that are, surface level easy.
Mm-hmm.
I think me and Mark have talked about this on the podcast before, where it's a little bit like bluffing in poker when you're a quiz master. You have to, sometimes throw some easy ones out there so you can get some of the interesting, ironic ones, in there as well.
You can throw them for a loop.
Yeah. So you have a final question for me.
I have a final question for you here.
What do we got?
I got two jobs. I got two of them. During the week, I work at a place called Rhino Linings. I work on trucks. I do spray-in plastic polyurea bed liners in trucks, along with other things, also industrial equipment and stuff like that. That is my day job. But my joy in work, I have another job that I work for. Another place that I work for called True Tours. We're located in the Franklin Shops in downtown Fort Myers on the corner of First and Broadway. And every Saturday morning, I take out tours there that have to do with the history of downtown Fort Myers, the early entrepreneurs and players in the history of downtown, how it got there. We also talk about the fort, the original fort. If you want to come out on Saturday mornings and listen to me talk about these things, I definitely make it very interesting. I got a really good rating on things like TripAdvisor. Just look up truetours.net. But something that's close to me is Florida history. And this one, I think if you live in Florida, can be close to every...
I do live in Florida.
And I do.
Oh, joy.
Be close to everyone... This is this was a joy to write. I loved this. Okay, John Gorey is enshrined in the National Statuary Hall in the U.S. Capitol. That would be Washington, D.C. One of two statues representing the state of Florida. He was a physician, a humanitarian, and an inventor who lived the better part of his life in Apalachicola, Florida. In 1851... he won the first American patent for this.
1851. He was an inventor. What's his name? John Gorey?
He was a physician. Mm-hmm. That was his first job. That was his most important job.
Mm-hmm.
A humanitarian and an inventor.
Hmm.
He lived the better part of his life in Apalachicola, Florida. Yeah. And in 1851, he won the first American patent for this.
And his name one more time.
John Gorey.
John Gorey.
There's a big statuary hall in Washington, D.C. that has statues of important people in U.S. history. And they're still adding statues to it all the time.
Right.
There are two statues to represent each state.
Yeah.
For people from that state that, are representative.
Do you know who the other statue is?
I do. It is...
I don't think that's going to help this question.
I don't think it's going to help, but his name's General Kirby.
Okay.
He was very instrumental during the American Civil War in the campaign to retake portions of Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
He had a home in Jacksonville, I believe.
Was he Confederate or Union?
He was Confederate, yeah. Okay. He was a Confederate general. And actually, I do know recently that his statue is going to be replaced by Mary Bethune. You might recognize her name from Bethune Cookman. She was a very important African-American lady in Florida history. I don't think many people are going to disagree that she was, and that she probably deserves to be in the American Statuary Hall.
So they're swapping those two statues out?
But John Gorey's going to stay there, and I'm glad he is.
Yeah. John Gorey. So 1850s, Florida, inventions in Florida, the first American patent. So we have a patent holder that is very famous for having a winter home in Fort Myers, Thomas Edison.
Lots of them.
Yeah.
Lots of patents.
Mm-hmm. Lots of rubber patents. So I don't think it's anything related to that. Edison and Henry Ford were buddies. There was some interest there in getting some cheap rubber or figuring out how to synthesize rubber from some of the plants around here.
Correct.
So I don't think it's anything related to that. I'm trying to think what in Florida would be really valuable to have enough that you'd get a statue. In the Capitol? Is it the Capitol Gallery?
In the U.S. in Washington, D.C. Oh, okay. It's in the National Statuary Hall.
Okay. That's not inside the Capitol building, though.
It's not in the Capitol building. Okay. It's a statuary hall that's dedicated to people that had, you know...
And you said he was a physician.
A humanitarian, and an inventor. Obviously, he invented something, and he went for a patent for it, but he was most importantly a physician.
Yeah. Okay, so... medical inventions. I'm trying to think there. You know, I've got a gut instinct here with something related to refrigeration. So I want to say like a refrigerator or some kind of cooling system. Would you accept either of those? Are either of those right?
Is that your answer?
That's going to be my answer. I think either it's... That's what I'm... Yeah, I think so.
You would be damn right.
Wow.
Yeah, because in 1851...
I was thinking air conditioning, and I was like, okay. Refrigeration, it's all kind of connected, though.
We get a little bit of an explanation. Yeah. Any one of these answers would have been correct. Air conditioning, refrigeration, or ice making.
Okay.
Any one of those, because
they all principally are the same.
Well, it all has to do with cooling things and cooling the air, cooling water down to a lower temperature, making the environment more palatable for different things, whether it be personal comfort or... creating ice, which is obviously a very big deal, an important thing.
Yeah.
Before he came up with this invention, you had to ship ice down from up north. And of course, that's costly, expensive, and time consuming.
Right.
And how could you do that? He came up with it. Now, he wasn't the first guy to come up with the idea of expanding and contracting gases in order to refrigerate things. There was actually another American who won a patent in Great Britain for it. But he had a problem. He was a physician in Apalachicola, and of course, back then they didn't have mosquito control, so malaria was a real problem in Florida. And he had lots and lots of patients that needed relief, you know. And he came up with this idea of moving air over blocks of ice. Of course, that was it worked. It definitely worked, but that was time consuming and expensive. But he came up with this idea of expanding gases and contracting gases in order to cool environments, in order to make ice, or just to refrigerate an area. And his patent was won. And he actually quit working as a physician, but he quit working to kind of follow this invention and try and build on it. It didn't work out for him.
No.
It never did. No, it never really worked out for him. And he kind of died, you know, in obscurity.
As so many geniuses do.
And then later on, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I think Mozart. Later on,
yep.
You might have heard of a guy named Carrier who, you know, was able to expand on this idea and mass produce
and
it.
And commercialize it.
You might have heard of that guy.
Yep.
And he was a French guy. But John Gorey kind of, he went off into obscurity, but he was kind of the first guy, you know, to come up with the idea of refrigerating our air to make, you know, us more comfortable or a group of people more comfortable in Florida, which I kind of think, you know, I look back at my people are from Florida.
Right.
And I think to myself, you know, in the month of August all the time, how did my mother and grandmother and great grandfather do it?
Yeah.
You know, how did they make it through this? How would you make it in Florida? So your instincts were correct, man. How would you make it down here without air conditioning? And that was in 1851.
It would be tough, you know, especially if you consider, you know, the outside temperature being inside. It would be especially tough without a lot of ventilation. But there's some science that shows that your body will acclimate to temperatures pretty easily. So we, in a sense, live in a more privileged time where air conditioning is readily available, and we've almost become addicted to it because we can have it pretty much whenever we want.
You got any of that air conditioning, man?
Right. Strangely, I think I might have picked that fact up. I don't know. Maybe I'm just remembering it, association.
I don't want my body to acclimate to that. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'd rather sit in the AC and watch my football. Man.
There's a movie with Bam Margera and Brand DiCamillo from Jackass, and I think Brand's idea, his character's idea in the movie, is to build a reverse microwave. It's like a microwave that freezes things instead of heating them up. It fast freezes them.
Well,
in the movie, they kind of use this as a device. Like, isn't he wasting his time with this idea? And then he actually does it.
Wow. I wouldn't think that would be a waste of time. But that would be marketable, definitely.
Yeah. Seth, that's fascinating. Thanks for letting us know all about John Gorey and all of the other interesting questions that you asked. Appreciate you coming on the podcast.
I appreciate you having me here. I have a blast. I can't wait for Mark to get back here and we can hear all of his stories of his exploits and his what did he do? Was it good or bad? Was it sinful?
Right.
Was it healthy?
We'll probably get half the story.
Yeah, no. Well, whatever story we get, I'm going to be glad to hear it when he gets back here. I think it's going
to
be great.
And listeners, if you're in the Fort Myers area and you want to take a tour with Seth, check him out on Saturday mornings.
10:30, go on truetours.net. You have to book your tour there. Of course, you can show up. I recommend that you go online and purchase your tickets ahead of time. That would probably be the best idea. But you can show up at 10:30 on Saturday mornings, corner of First and Broadway. It's called True Tours. It's a lot of fun. I do hope that you guys come out to Three Pepper Burrito on Monday nights, where I always am. I win there a lot.
You do. I don't have the exact numbers in here, but it's,
I don't mind competition. I want
more. I would say probably
of
like 30, maybe 30% of the games that we've done there.
I want more people to show up. I would totally be happy, losing more just for the competition, because it's
the
more fun when other people show up.
The moistness and men come back out. It was good to see some of our listener teams
out of Mana. There all the time. They're really good.
So you can check us out there on Mondays at Three Pepper Burrito Company in downtown Fort Myers. That starts at 7:30. Then again, Wednesdays at Bury Me Brewing Company, also in Fort Myers. That one starts at 7. Seth sometimes comes out to that one. And also each and every Thursday at Number 3 Craft Brews and Beer Bar in downtown Cape Coral. That show is starting at 7:30. Mark Davis makes his return to Nice Guys Trivia on Wednesday night this week, so check him out there. Thanks for listening, everybody. Hope you had fun. Join us every Monday morning for a new episode by subscribing to No Nonsense Trivia Challenge on your favorite podcast platform. You can support this podcast on Patreon by visiting our website, nononsense.fireside.fm, and clicking the support link at the top, which will take you to our Patreon page. You can also write us at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com. Please also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at No Nonsense Trivia, and Twitter at No Non Trivia, because there's a character limit on that. And finally, don't forget to leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher. 5 stars only, please. Until next time, No Nonsense listeners, this has been the darkest timeline episode.